without further ado, we will just kind of jump right into this. And the whole reason that we're talking about cybersecurity is this is not just a technology issue, okay? My company, Integrity, is a national, we do information security consulting for large companies, small companies, international companies. We're based actually in Ankeny. We have an office in Dallas and one in Kansas City. But we have clients across the U.S. Many of them, like I said, are international companies as well. And what we try and get them to understand is that this is a people issue. Okay? This is a business issue. This is a technology issue. Cybersecurity encompasses a lot of different things. And it's not just a business issue. It's an organizational issue. It's an individual issue. Okay? And so that's why I'm here today, is to kind of help answer some of these questions, talk to you about kind of the reason that people hack and the way that they hack today and some of the things that you probably are facing that you might not even know about yet. And then give you the opportunity to just pick my brain. Like I said, I've only got about 10 slides. We'll blow through those pretty quickly. So I want you to ask me questions. Throw me a scenario. Say, hey, what about this? Or should I be worried about that? Okay, that's what I'm looking for. Okay, everybody good with that?
Good.
Thank you. I like the feedback. Okay, so we cannot have a discussion about cybersecurity without having a discussion about risk. Okay, I was going to ask how many of you showered or bathed today. And then I realize that might be awkward for those of you who don't raise your hand and the people around you get up and walk away. So I'm going to ask, how many of you have showered or bathed in the last week? Is that safe? Okay, good. All right. How many of you drove the treacherous highways, byways, city streets to get here today? Okay. How many of you ate food here today? Okay, good. So you guys are a bunch of risky, taking crazy risk, okay? You're putting your life at risk on a daily basis. I mean, you jumped in the shower, you got in the bathtub, and you could have slipped and fallen, could have drowned in the bathtub, you could have gotten in a horrific car accident here, you could have choked on your food. You took some massive risk just to be here today, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much for that, okay? What I want you to understand is that that's what this is about. Life is about taking risk, okay? Cybersecurity is about risk. Using technology is about risk. There's risk in every single thing we do. And we have to understand that, and we have to understand how to approach risk. Okay? Typically, when you think about managing risk in your environment, okay, your homes, your workplaces, your families, those types of things, you have to balance something, right? You have to balance ease of access, ease of use, whatever, with a cost of buying something or doing something. You have to take a look at, okay, how much is my car worth or my house worth or my life worth, and what would happen if that were to, you know, to be impacted. Okay, so I'm going to buy some insurance to offset some of those financial, you know, repercussions. Okay? That's what we do. We manage risk. Okay? So what I'm going to talk to you today is I don't want to scare you. Okay, technology is scary stuff. The things that are happening today in the world, there's some really scary stuff out there. Okay, yeah.
Roger said you would scare the daylights out of us.
So Roger and I have a long history together. Okay, so my wife Jenny and his daughter Terry grew up together. So Roger and I have a really long history. So I pretty much was just trying to scare Roger. Right? Is anytime I can make him uncomfortable, my life is successful. So good, good. I probably will scare some of you, okay, unintentionally. I don't want that to be what you take away from this, okay? I want you to take away from, yes, there's some risk out there and there's some things that you should be worried about, but I don't want you to leave here saying, I'm throwing my computer in the trash and I'm never using it again, okay? Because that's probably not the appropriate response. There are ways to mitigate that, okay? So, if I can get my thing to work. Okay, so what are we going to cover? We're going to cover a little bit about securing your home network and why that's important, some of the things that you can do there. We'll talk about online banking and some of the changes that are coming and some of the things that you should be looking for, mobile banking, remote deposit, kind of all of those things. We'll talk about fraudulent phone calls. Okay, most of you in this group are at high risk. You're high targets for this, and so we want to talk a little bit about that. That's something that we typically call pretexting. It's a technical term for it. Email phishing is another big thing. And then credit score monitoring, why that's important, even if you don't really care about your credit anymore. Other people do, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. So, securing your home network, okay? Password protection, How many people have like a wireless network or high-speed internet? Okay, so you all have some sort of modem, router, or something like that. Okay, it's very, very, very important that you have passwords on that. Okay, make sure there's two things. There's the administrator password, okay, and then there's a password for your wireless network. Both of those need to be changed. These companies do a pretty good job of forcing you to change the default wireless password, okay? But what they don't do is force you to change the administrative password. And here's what happens, okay? You plug this side of the modem into the internet, and you plug this side into your network, or you have your wireless here, and you stop people from attaching to your wireless network with a password, right? But on this side, it's the same default password that came from the manufacturer. Well, guess what? It's in the documentation. It's on the internet. Everybody knows where it is. So if I'm the hacker guy out here, okay, I'm using my computer, and I'm just scanning, and I wait for these responses to come back, and I see, oh, this one comes back, and hey, I know what password, I know what router that is. I wonder if they changed their username and password. And I log in with admin or admin password or blank username and password, which is typically the default. And presto, I'm now into your network from the internet. I didn't use your wireless network because I'm 2,000 miles away. I use the internet. Okay? So changing your password on those routers is absolutely critical. And this is one of the things that we often see is overlooked when we hear about individuals being hacked, when we hear about people getting their networks compromised at home. It's because that admin or that administrative password that's on that router has not been changed. Okay? Yeah. I'm glad you asked. There's about 8,000 different ways for every single different model that's out there. The best way to do it is just to look on it, find your router model, okay, and then go out to Google and say, change admin password and your model number. And there'll be a sheet that'll come up. It'll be a an instruction guide, a how-to guide, or you can go to that manufacturer's website. And just put in their, like in the search terms, just put in your model number, and it'll come up with a user manual. And then you just look in there. One of the options will be to change the admin password. It's usually very simple. Usually will take you 2 or 3 minutes once you've kind of figured out what it is that you're doing. It's usually a web browser. You'll just put an IP address in. It'll connect to your router. It'll pop up the authentication. You'll put in the old username or the default username and password. And then there'll be a couple of pages that you click through, and it'll say change password, and then you add a new password in, and away you go. And that's all it takes. Yeah?
Does it make any difference on the age of the router? Are the newer ones better than the old? A lot of times you can call a person and say change my password, and they go, well, this thing is ancient. You need the new super router.
Yeah. Nope.
They're
pretty much the same. The new ones have more complex passwords, and some of the newer ones have like a unique password that's dynamically assigned when they manufacture it, but those are fewer and far between. Most people don't have something that is that new or that advanced, and so they're really at risk.
Did you say there were two passwords, one on a router, one on a wireless network?
Yep. So when you set up the wireless network to begin with, it probably prompted you for, like, what do you want the SSID or the network name to be? So when you try and connect to it from, like, your laptop, you see a network that says, like, My Home or Dave's Router or something. When you set that up, you also set up the password so that when you connect to it, there's a password. So it says, hey, this is My Home network, and there's a password for all of the wireless users. So that's that network and or that way to access the network, but then there's also that default admin password. Does that help? All right, next one, antivirus. Time and time and time again, we see computers getting compromised through what we call malware, okay? And that malware is a more encompassing term because a virus is one piece or one type of malware, but there are Trojans, there's worms, there's all sorts of other things, okay? So when we say antivirus, we really are talking about anti-malware tools. So you probably have seen these things from Webroot and Trend Micro and Symantec and McAfee and all of these folks, okay? You need some product on your computer that is going to protect against that, okay? There's next-generation anti-malware. There's a lot of hype and those types of things out there, and everybody asks me, okay, well, which one should I buy? And I say, again, go out to Google and look for, you know, 2017 top anti-malware software. And it'll give you the listing of this year. Here's the top 10. I guarantee you in 6 months that list is going to shuffle and somebody that was not even on the list is going to be up there. That's just how fast that software changes.
So what are you running here?
What's that?
What are you running on this thing?
On this one, this is my work computer. So this one uses Bitdefender right now, but we had Trend Micro and then we had Webroot. So it's one of those things where we just pick whatever is current and working well. And some of it is because for us, we have lots of computers, so we've got to manage it and do some other stuff. For home use, I say find one of the top brands, find the one that has the most features that you can get or that you want at the best price, and you'll be safe. But that's an annual cost. Sometimes you can buy it, and it's like 3 years up front. But don't forget, when you start getting those warnings that you need to renew, either renew that subscription or go look for a new product, you know, that's better today than it was 2 years ago. And it's critical to your protection.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you use it for your home computer, any one of those is good. And you can about keep it on there forever because it's not going to change that much.
Yeah, so the virus definitions are constantly being updated. There are free ones out there. I'll tell you, the free ones are not quite as good at catching things as the paid subscription ones. So don't be suckered into, hey, I can get this for free. Yes, you can, but you're still going to be, you'll be mitigating your risk by a little bit. There's still going to be a lot of risk up there that if you had paid $39 for 3 years or whatever it happens to be, you'd be at a lot less risk. So that's how I would approach that. Yeah, so if you have something that's called like internet security, you know, Norton Internet Security or Trend Micro's Platinum Security or whatever it happens to be, that would have anti-malware in it. If you look at like the box that you get or if you look at the little console, you know, when you click on it, it'll open up. It'll have something like a firewall. It'll say anti-malware, anti-phishing. It may say antivirus. If you just look at that, that'll tell you what's in there. So. Oh, I'm sorry, what?
Because we're recording, would you mind repeating some of the questions?
Absolutely, yep. The next thing is what we call Internet of Things, or IoT. Right? This is all of those stupid little things that are getting connected to the Internet that nobody thinks about. Okay? Anybody have a Nest thermostat? Or some programmable wireless thermostat? Anybody have a toaster that's connected to the Internet yet? Okay. It's coming. Don't worry. It will be. There's refrigerators that are connected to the Internet now. Your TV. Anybody got a smart TV? Yep. Smart TVs are connected to the Internet. Did you know they're recording everything that you say, everything that you hear, anytime that television is on or off, depending on the TV, and it's sending it back to the company that manufactured the TV so that they can get better metrics on how to record your voice and all of that sort of stuff. So you basically have placed a microphone in your house, and all of that data is being recorded. Now, there's some...
Can they see what goes on?
Can they see what you're doing? If you have an Xbox or one of the other game consoles that have like the Kinect or some of the other stuff that can, you don't need a controller, you can just use gestures, then yes, they can. Or hackers can use it. So there are a lot of different things out there. How many of you have grandkids or great-grandkids in school that have school-issued computers or Chromebooks or those types of things? Guess what? Across the U.S., there's been multiple cases where administrators at a school have used those to remotely spy on parents and families. They can remotely turn on the microphone. They can remotely turn on the camera and spy and see everything that's happening in a house. Okay? These types of things are happening. They're real. Everything is connected. Everything has a microphone and a camera built into it. If you don't trust it, turn it off, unplug it. Okay? That's the only thing I can tell you at this point.
So is it true that if you put a piece of tape over your computer camera, that protects you?
They can't see it, but they could still turn on the microphone.
Okay. Put a piece of tape over the microphone.
Even then, tape doesn't cover the microphone. So think about a GoPro. You can put a GoPro in a hard plastic case, and you can still hear everything crystal clear.
Is there any way, like a light that'll come on to alert you that they've turned on the microphone?
Technically, yes. I mean, that's the way many of them work. Some of them don't, but even the ones that's the way they're supposed to work. If I'm a hacker, I can just tell the code not to turn the camera light on and say, turn the camera on, but turn the light off. So.
Is that the same with DVRs and things?
I'm sorry?
DVRs,
yes. DVRs, anything that's connected to the internet, okay? So, and this is why it's so important to password protect your router, because once I get into the router, I can then hop to any of these things that are connected to your internal network. And I can control them, and I can do lots of things. Computers have lots of security on them, okay? The operating systems are built pretty well. They've got firewalls, they've got antivirus and all of this. All of these other devices have nothing on them. They're not built to be secure. They're not built to keep hackers out. They're built to be purpose-driven, very specific, and very cheap and very easy. Okay, so you have to worry about this stuff. Now, again, I don't want you to go home and yank everything out of the wall and not touch anything and say, I'm done with technology, I'm getting rid of all of this. But you need to understand the risks that are there and balance that and say, hey, there might be some things here that I simply choose not to use, okay, or that I simply choose to turn off completely, fold it closed, and unplug it to make sure that it's not being used against me.
Apple products, is that safer than non-Apple products?
Not even remotely close. No. No. I can hack Apple products as quickly as I can hack anything else. So the only reason that people say Apple products are safer or more secure is because they're not targeted as much. But when they are targeted, they're just as susceptible to anything else. So when you look at the percentages of devices that are compromised, it's way more. But when you look at the percentages of vehicles that are wrecked or stolen, you're going to see a lot more Chevys than Maseratis, just simply because there's a gazillion Chevys on the road versus Maseratis.
Why aren't they attacked?
Because they're not used in business as much. That's a big part of it. And because they're just simply, from a market perspective, there are just so many more PCs than there are Apple products.
Well, I had the Apple Store tell me.
I'm sorry?
I had the Apple Store tell me that Apples don't get viruses.
And they're lying through their teeth. So viruses are written very different than worms and Trojans. Okay, so when I talk about malware, viruses are more prevalent on Windows machines, but worms and Trojans are much more prevalent on Linux and Macintosh. So when you look at malware as a whole, there are different things that attack different types of operating systems, and an Apple OS is not immune to malware as a whole.
The other thing is, there is a trend out there going after Apple devices. They cost more money normally, yeah. So they realize their target may have more money in their bank account.
Yeah. So there's risk, again, there's risk in everything that you have and everything that you use.
Can cell phones be turned on and off, or camera and that kind of thing remotely?
Is it connected to the internet? Yeah. Yep. Cell phones are actually one of the worst things right now because there's just very few controls around those. You're downloading every stupid little app that you can find that thinks it's cool, or maybe not you, maybe a kid or a grandkid or whoever, or you think, hey, this little application would be fun to do. It's the wild, wild west out in the application development world. So if you have an Android phone, you're most at risk. Okay? The Android operating system, the Google Play Store, or the Google Play, there's very few controls and vetting of the applications that get added there. So you pretty much are playing Russian roulette every time you download one of those applications. In the Apple Store, there's a few more controls in place. There's a little bit of vetting of those applications and the developers before they're allowed to be published. And then in the Windows Store, there's even more controls. Now, there's hardly anybody writing anything for the Windows phone and Windows applications, and I get that, I understand that, but they also have the tightest ecosystem. So, okay? All right. Next one, online banking. Anybody use online banking, mobile banking, remote deposit? Take a picture of your check and you deposit without going to the bank, okay? So a couple of things. Online banking is a huge target, okay? It can be attacked from your PC. It can be attacked from your iPad, your tablets, your phones, whatever it happens to be, okay? So a couple of things that you have to do. You have to find a complex password that is unique that you don't use for anything else. Okay? Because one of the things that happens is a website gets compromised, and then they take that password database and they use it to attack other password or other websites. Okay, so if you've got a Netflix password and your Netflix password is compromised, and it's also the same password you use for your bank is now compromised. Okay, your bank account is now potentially compromised. Let's put it that way. Okay, so find something for your bank that you do not use for anything else. I don't care if you use the same password for just about everything else you have a different password for your bank, okay? And change it frequently. When I say frequently, I say every 90 days would be great, at least twice a year, okay? At bare minimum, change it twice a year, okay? Change it on a birthday and an anniversary, or a birthday and a Christmas, or, you know, pick two holidays, Memorial Day and Christmas, or, you know, find 2 days that you will remember, or set a reminder on your calendar or whatever and say, I need to change my banking password, okay? The second part of that is to use two-factor authentication. Okay? Basically, what two-factor authentication is something that's outside of your password that identifies you, okay? When we say multi-factor, we say one of three factors. Something you know, something you have, or something you are. Something you know is your password. Okay? Something you have would be your cell phone, and they could send a text message to it with a one-time code. Okay? Something you are would be a fingerprint or a retina scan or a handprint or something of that nature. Okay? My guess is most of you bank at places that don't yet offer two-factor authentication. You need to start pushing your banks. If they don't have this, you need to start pushing them and telling them, I want this, I want this, I want this. Okay? They're not going to do it until you ask for it. And here's why this is important. Okay? If I compromise your password, so let's say Netflix gets hacked, somebody gets your password, and then they go to your bank, and they try and use your username and your password, it's still going to send a text message to your phone, and it won't let you log in until whoever has your phone takes that text message, gets the one-time code, and then types the one-time code in. So it doesn't matter if you have my username and password. You have to have this one-time code, and it's going to be different every single time you log in. Okay? Two-factor authentication is great. It breaks a ton of the hacking attempts that are out there. Okay? So this is really, really important. If you are serious about this, find a bank that offers this, or simply don't use online banking. Okay? Change your password to something really, 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 really strong, and then don't use it. Okay? And when I say really, really strong, I mean like 50 characters, random characters, and then don't ever use your online banking. Okay? This is one of those areas where I do want to scare you, because here's the problem. Everybody thinks your bank is FDIC insured and all of your deposits are good, right? It's perfect. If somebody walks into the bank and physically robs it, the FDIC will insure your deposits. Okay? They will come in, they'll replace it, and be done. If somebody uses a cyber attack to get your deposits, that's not necessarily covered by the FDIC. Okay? Now, it's a very broad generalization. There's some other stuff in the background, but there are far fewer protections from the federal government for cyber attacks against the banking system than there are for physical attacks against the banking system. And that's just a product of our laws not catching up with the real world yet. Okay? Now, banks have insurance that will cover those losses, okay? But the reality is you're then reliant on how good your bank's insurance company is and how fast they will replace those losses and whether or not it's big enough that your bank is still going to say, well, we had $300 million in deposits, but we only had $200 million of insurance, and it wiped out everything. Well, you're only getting partial money back. Everybody that had $300 million is now splitting $200 million. And you got to figure out how much of that is a loss for you. So this is a big risk. This is one of the ones where I do want you to leave here a little bit scared and start thinking about how do I deal with this a little bit. Okay.
So you do the two-factor, and most obvious way to do it is with a cell phone text.
Yep.
And you don't always have access to your cell phone text. What do you do?
Then you can't. Then you can't log into the bank and you have to call them and say, hey, I need you to do a wire transfer or I need to do something else. So you just don't have access to the online banking portion of it. So you could still call them. You'll still have a security code that you can call and identify yourself, and they'll ask you a bunch of questions. If you needed to make a transfer, if you needed to put money in a different account, or you needed to wire money to yourself, you could still do that. You just can't do it.
I have like 50 passwords. Mm-hmm. Okay, and sometimes they're the same because I can't possibly remember. I travel if I'm out of the office. If I'm out of the office, I can't remember half the passwords when I'm on the phone. They have this computer program called a password management.
Right. Yep.
Are those any good?
Yep.
Are those reliable?
So the question is, how do I manage 50 different passwords? Okay. And there are multiple tools out there, password managers. One of them that we know of that we use is called LastPass. That's a good one. There are others that are out there. There is a risk still that could be compromised, but typically they're pretty good. They encrypt the passwords. They encrypt it, and then they re-encrypt it with a password that only you know, so there's two layers of encryption. So those things are good. Many of those have like a mobile application that will be on your phone. It's one that can be on your computer as well. So when you're trying to manage a lot of passwords, something like that would work well.
And are they easy to use? Because yep. Like I have this thing about two-factor, they keep sending me this stupid code on the phone, and every time I log out, I have to go through this big process to get in.
Yep.
To me, that's just a big hassle.
Well, and that's where it comes down to risk. How much risk are you willing to take and how much inconvenience, right? So in anything, we can do it cheap, we can do it fast, we can do it good, right? You can pick two of those, but you can't do all three, right? You can do it cheap and fast, but you can't do it good, do it well. You can do it well and fast, but it ain't going to be cheap, right? So everything is about risk. So you have to say, wow, this is really a pain. I don't want to have to log in and do all of this. Okay, that's fine. You're taking a risk that password could be compromised. It's always this balance. Well, everything is a balance. And that's why I say I don't want you to go home and just rip everything out or stop using all of this, but I want you to think through it. Yes. So the question is, does the computer make a difference? Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yes, the phone home, using the phone to do it on the phone.
Oh, using the phone? Yeah, yes. The phone is much less risky because somebody would have to actually be tapped into the phone, and you can only be tapped into a certain number of phones. So using the phone is certainly less risky, but they're still, then you're giving up convenience of being able to do it from wherever and having to wait on hold and those types of things. Yeah.
If I decide I no longer wish to do online banking, is there a procedure that I can do to make everything go away?
Yep, just contact your bank and tell them you no longer want to participate. You want your account separated from home banking, and they can deactivate that so that nobody can access your account remotely. No, nope. You'd have to contact your bank because there's a back-end process they would have to do to disable that.
The two-factor authentication. Oh, on the two-factor, is that like your name? I mean, whatever you use for that, and your password. Is that what that is?
No. So that would be single-factor, or I'm sorry, two. Two instances of the same factor because it's something that you know. So it has to be something different. So it has to be something you know and something you have, right? So that's where the phone with the text message coming in, that's something that you have, and then something you know would be your password. You know your name and your password. So that's not multi-factor. So
we have to do that if I forget to use the wrong password because ours is changed so often.
It's kind of a weak security control that they put in there just as a kind of a check. But the reality is if I'm really targeting you, I probably know what your last name is or your first name is. I might even know where you were born. I might know the name of your oldest child. You know, a lot of those types of questions, these security questions they ask you, they're all fact-based. And if I know you well enough, I know the facts. I know what color your eyes are. I know where you were married. I know where you met your spouse. You know, I know all of those things.
Mm-hmm. To get out of ID theft.
Yeah.
They have all that information.
Yeah, then it's kind of that how many lies can you remember? But
we used a paper notebook.
Yeah. Right.
They played with us and took those group two names off the phone of 60 names.
Yeah.
So it's important if this isn't done, even when this was done, the two-factor authentication, we got five similar, the exact same two-factor authentications from three different phone numbers.
Right.
So if you're, do the first part, because if you, even two-factor doesn't work if you've been hacked.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, social engineering. Okay, this is a not necessarily a new form of hacking, but it is certainly on the rise. If you are familiar with a con artist, then you are familiar with a social engineer. Okay? Basically, what this is simply conning people. It's using our understanding of humanity, of how humans interact together, psychology, sociology, kind of all of that, to say, how can I take advantage of you? How can I get you to do something that I want you to do? Okay, so one of the biggest ways that we do this is called pretexting. So it's people doing fraudulent phone calls, okay? Calling and saying that they're from an organization. Will you give us money? Okay, give me your credit card, and I'm from the fraternal police order of whatever. Well, I have no idea if you really are from there or not. Okay, so just don't give them money. Okay, or if you want to give them money, go look them up on a website and validate that they are real and donate online, or write them a check and send it to their physical mailing address, okay, something of that nature. There are tons and tons and tons of scams across the United States, but especially in the Midwest, that target senior citizens. It's just a known fact that senior citizens are typically a lot more trusting, and you want to believe the best in people, and you get taken advantage of, okay? So you have to be very, very diligent in what's happening, what's going on, okay? So somebody says you have to act now, there's a limited time offer, your little antenna should be going up, ding, 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 something's not right here, okay? If you've won a free gift, anybody ever won a free cruise around the world? Yeah, that's an awesome deal, isn't it? It can't be too good to be true, because somebody's dying to give me a free cruise, okay? It's not. There's some hitch to it, and you got to figure that out, okay? You don't need to check out with the company, okay? We're good, okay? We're trustworthy. We're police officers. We're all ex-law enforcement. We're all ex-military. We're all disabled veterans, whatever happens to be. Anytime those types of things happen, you need to start asking more questions, really start pumping them for facts that you can verify before you do anything else with them, okay? And then anytime anybody asks you to send money, wire money, anything of that nature, don't do it, okay? Validate that, please. I've seen this happen way too many times where people are taken advantage of and they lose lots of money. I mean, big, big amounts of money. I don't know if anybody just saw, there was a news article about a young couple here in Iowa that was trying to buy a house in like Phoenix, and they got swindled out of $75,000 for the down payment because they wired it to what they thought was going to get them a house, and so they lost $75,000. Yeah.
How secure are your credit cards with like Amazon?
Mm-hmm.
I have one on file.
Yep.
I'm sure others do too.
Yep. So there's always a risk there. I would say that's a personal preference. I've got some that are online with them. With the bigger companies that I trust a little bit more, that I think have pretty robust security measures, I take a little bit more trust with them, and I go ahead and do that because I'm constantly buying and using that. Others, it's a one-time deal, and I don't save it, and I don't have them do it, or even I use PayPal, and then that way they never get my credit card information. They get their money from PayPal, and I trust PayPal. So. All right, next one is email phishing, okay? A lot of times, pretexting and email phishing will come hand in hand. You'll get an email from somebody, and then they're going to call you, okay? The reason that they're doing that is because they want to build trust. The fact that you've already gotten an email from this individual, and they know that, okay, they're using that to build trust with you because you know that you got an email from them, okay? So as soon as they start to build that level of trust, they can start to build and build and build and build upon that until you get to a point where you either trust them or throw them out with the trash. Okay, but either way, that's what they're trying to do. Okay, so any of these types of things, a couple of things that you need to look for. Okay, obviously the sweet deals, everybody gets the hey, you have a package delivery from FedEx and it has a UPS logo on it. Pretty sure they're not working in conjunction with each other to deliver you a package, right? Okay. Help me help you. Here's another big one, okay? This one could come in the form of an email. It could also be a pop-up that pops up on your screen that says, hey, you have a virus on your computer. Call this number, okay? Yeah, don't ever call that number, okay? It'll be Sanjay from Microsoft, okay? And Sanjay is not from Microsoft, okay? We did a forensic investigation on one of these for an organization, and Sanjay was not from Microsoft, and it turned out very bad for them, okay? Yeah.
And it cost me, and I don't have to get a brand new computer because what they do is once you allow them in your computer, they just put so much malware in that computer that it takes to, you know, and then they keep you going. They keep putting malware in it, just to keep money coming from you. And they continue to call me, and what I do is, because they call me on my phone now, is I just say, hold on a second. I go click, click, click. It says, okay, this call is being recorded, and there's a third party listening in. Click. Hang up.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So what you need to do, a couple of things you can look at from an email perspective, okay? I can make this right here say anything I want. I could say that this is from God, okay? I can make it say it's from you. I can make it say it's from anybody I want. So you can't trust this information right here, okay? There are ways to spoof that and do all sorts of stuff, okay? One of the things that you have to get used to doing is if you have a link here, okay, it says click this tracking number, okay, hover your mouse right here, and there should be a little window that will pop up, a little thing, and it will tell you exactly where that's going, okay? It'll tell you if it's going to something.de, that means it's going to some website in Germany. If it's going to .ru, it's going to Russia, okay? If it's going to BU, it's going to Bulgaria, okay? So that's a good way to know those things. If it's going to some place that it says it's from FedEx, but it doesn't go to FedEx.com, not FedEx.something.com, okay? FedEx.com, it is not from FedEx, okay? If it might say something like SurveyMonkey, okay? Well, SurveyMonkey is a legitimate survey tool, okay? You got to decide whether you trust it or not. I can tell you, when you click on these links, sometimes the only thing it takes is you click on the link and you've compromised your computer. Okay. Sometimes you have to do some other stuff, but sometimes all it takes is one click and boom. And it doesn't matter if it's a Mac, it doesn't matter if it's a PC, it doesn't matter if it's a Linux distribution. Sometimes all it takes is one click. So really start looking at these. Okay. Being critical. Little things. A font that just looks a little different. The color of the logo, the orange, doesn't look quite the same. Something just doesn't trust that instinct. Your little antenna are going to go up, okay? Trust those antenna and start driving to find what's actually happening, okay? Don't be afraid to not call the number on here. Don't be afraid to go out to the website, find the FedEx number, and say, hey, I got a package delivery notice, and this looks really, really good. Is this from you guys? And they'll tell you. Say, well, give us the tracking number that it says. And you give them, say, no, that's not even one of our tracking numbers. Ah, okay, great. Or they may say, absolutely, we were trying to deliver, somebody sent you a package, or, you know, it came from this individual and it's out for delivery, right? So kind of look through that. Email phishing is on the rise, okay? Email phishing, social engineering, pretexting, all of that stuff is skyrocketing because it's getting harder to hack the computers. So they're hacking the humans instead. You individually are the target, not your computer. And more often than not, it's a lot easier to hack a person than it is a computer anymore. All right. Again, don't open emails that you're not expecting or that look a little suspicious. Okay. Don't click on links or pictures. Okay. And then always verify. Okay. Again, don't verify with the information that's on your screen. Go to another source to get information that you can verify that with. Yeah.
Why is that spelled P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G?
That's just how they decided. That's just how...
It helps us give a clue to what they're doing?
No, that's just how they decided they were going to call it, because they didn't want to say fish like actual fish, so...
The issue I have to deal with is I get about 75 to 100 emails every day that have nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
So I have to click clear through those. I don't do one at a time. I do the whole list and keep going and then get wiped them off. Is there anything that you can do? I mean, unsubscribe does not help.
Yep. So the question is, what can I do about spam emails, all this junk that comes into my email box? Don't click the unsubscribe link, because that just tells them that you're active, and then they sell that information to everybody else, and that actually increases your spam, okay? So don't click the unsubscribe link. Utilize either your email service provider will have anti-spam filters that you can crank up. Now, the problem is you crank it up, and they may misclassify something, and something good actually gets moved into your spam box, okay? Or if you don't use your email service provider, if you use one of those anti-malware tools like that have other stuff in it, the internet security or premium security or whatever, it will have an anti-spam thing in there as well. And you can use that. That'll help cut down on some of the stuff that absolutely is spam. So I would say if you do that, start it at kind of a low or a medium level. Make sure that it seems to be catching most of the stuff without filtering out the good stuff, and that will reduce a bunch of that junk for you. Yeah.
But it does catch an awful lot of them. Your phone number comes up and says suspected spam.
Yep.
And it'll catch them, but sometimes it doesn't.
Yep.
How about if you block it?
If you block it. Yep, you can block. You can put in basically what they call a whitelist. You can block everything except for the few things that you know are legitimate. That's a great way to do it, but you have to know that somebody's going to want to send you an email and allow it in before, or you can kind of do it the other way and say, I'm going to blacklist things and I'll allow everything except for this thing, this list of known bad things.
How do you recommend an Apple Mac does not have blocking?
It doesn't what? So if you buy a Norton or a Trend Micro or something like that for your Apple Macintosh, it will have the same functionality in there, so you can use that. Trend Micro, Symantec, McAfee, Bitdefender, WebRoot, literally just go out to that. I can't make specific recommendations because of our company and the way we do business, so I have to be very careful about endorsing any specific product. Yep, just Google top antivirus for Mac, and that will tell you what you need. Okay. ATM skimming, this is a big problem. You probably have seen some of the things on the news, even here in Des Moines. Basically what happens is I take a device and I put it right on top of the ATM or the card reader or the gas pump or whatever happens to be. You don't notice it. You swipe your card or insert your card and pull it back out, and I've grabbed all of your information from that magnetic stripe on the back of your card. And I have your credit card number, I have the expiration date, I have the CVV, I have all of that information. Okay. All I can tell you is to be diligent. Okay. Look for loose-fitting things. If all of a sudden you've always been to this gas pump and everything is black on the card reader and today it's green, that's a good indication that maybe something is different. Okay, go inside and pay. Okay, grab a hold of it and shake it. Okay, you're not going to break it. If it's truly legit, you can shake it and it's not going to break. If you shake it and the thing comes off, take it inside and say, I broke your ATM machine. And they'll be like, how'd you do that? And say, well, I don't think it's actually real, okay? And then they'll call the police, and everybody will come out and look at it, okay? But they're not going to be upset with you if you break the machine, because I guarantee you if it's legit, you're not breaking it, okay? So if you break it, it wasn't legit to begin with, okay? Block the view of the keypad when entering the PIN, okay? A lot of things, what's happening is they're putting a little pinhole micro camera at the top, okay? And so when you put in your PIN, they've already skimmed the card number, and now they've captured your PIN number, and they can siphon your information, or they can siphon the funds right out of your account.
So do you suggest getting out of your card? When I'm sitting in my car, there's no way I can reach you to get
cover up. Yeah, it just depends on what kind of car you drive. Like, I drive a truck, a big Suburban, so I can just kind of stick my hand, and I'm always reaching down, not reaching up. Sometimes people just kind of put one hand over and kind of do it like this, so it just kind of depends on how what devices you're using, where you use them at, those types of things. Okay, look for the security tape. Okay, just because it's there doesn't mean it's valid, but if it's got a cut in it, I guarantee you something's not right. Okay, so just look at it and say, okay, it looks fairly good. You know, look at all of the other pumps that they all have red security seals on them. You know, that's probably legit. If one of them has red security seals and everything else has blue security seals, they maybe go to a different pump.
How much safer is like in the ATM, like at a store, like at, you know, Walmart or Hy-Vee, where you use, is it any safer because it's inside?
No. No. There have been plenty of skimmers. There have been skimmers placed on the ATMs in a bank lobby. So, yes. So it doesn't matter where that ATM is. They, none of them are more secure than the others. And it's not just ATMs. It's you go to Hy-Vee or Fairway or whatever, and you swipe your card at the counter. There's little overlay devices that somebody distracts the cashier, and then somebody sticks an overlay device on there, and it looks exactly like the other ones. It's just a little bit larger because it's got to put the real one underneath it. And you swipe the card, and it still works because it passes your information into the card reader, but it's also swiping yours at the same time. Okay, so you'll see it. A lot of times, like if the card doesn't fit really well or if it's really tight sliding it, that's an indication too.
How about a chip card? What you're talking about, the magnetic strip, when you use
yeah.
the chip and
hit. Yeah. So chip readers, to some degree, do stop this. But there are new technologies that the chip readers even are being cloned, and some other things are happening, which it's still... The chip basically limits the liability for the retailer. The chip doesn't limit the liability for you, because you could still take that card, and if the retailer doesn't allow chip reading, you can still swipe it and it works. So as long as I have that magnetic information, or as long as I got the information from the chip, I can still do some things with it. Now, it certainly reduces the ability, but it's still a risk. All right. Last one, credit score monitoring. This is absolutely critical for you. And if you have any kids who have young kids, if you have young kids, okay, grandkids, whatever, there are two groups of people that are targeted in credit monitoring schemes, okay? Young kids, not so young kids, okay? Is that fair? That work?
Okay. That was nice of you.
The idea here is that in the prime of our life, in the middle of having families and working jobs and buying houses and cars and sending kids to school and everything else, we're constantly using credit, okay? And so we constantly kind of have an idea, even if you're not actively monitoring your credit, you kind of know what your credit score is, you kind of know, yeah, I saw a credit report when I went to get a loan or, you know, whatever, okay? From about 0 to 16, most kids have no need for a credit score. They're not buying cars, they're not getting jobs, they're not saving, you know, or they're not applying for college loans and those types of things, okay? So there's about 16 years of an active Social Security number being available that somebody could use to fraudulently open accounts. And this has happened. There have been kids who all of a sudden their parents are starting to plan for college and they're starting to do, you know, other stuff. And so a bank, you know, scans their credit report and come to find out they've got a house in default on their name. Okay, they've got cars on their name. They've got all sorts of debt. Okay, same thing happens at the other end of the spectrum. Okay, you stop buying cars, you stop sending kids to school, you stop getting loans and all these things, and I don't care about my credit. Well, you should, because if somebody takes your Social Security number and goes and racks up tons and tons and tons of debt, guess what? Your estate is on the hook for that unless you get it solved before the estate takes over. Okay. So all of a sudden, you start having these problems where there's a lot of active monitoring right in the middle of life. There's very little monitoring at the beginning and the end of that life spectrum, okay? So you guys really need to be diligent about doing this, okay? Once a year, you can go out to freecreditreport.com. You can get a free credit report from each of the three agencies, and it's important to get all three, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, okay? It's important to get all three of them because they all get information from different places. Usually they're pretty close, but occasionally one will have a credit card or a house or something on it that's not yours, okay? I'm a junior. My name is David Arlen Nelson Jr. And when I started to get into my own environment and wanting to buy cars and houses, I realized that half of my dad's credit history was on my credit history. And we had to good problems getting that solved, okay? So it took some time. We had to figure that out. It was a good thing that I knew my dad, and he was willing to work with me and, you know, and write the letters that I needed. I can't imagine. I mean, that was a hassle alone. I can't imagine if it really wasn't mine and I had no way to prove it, right? I didn't have anybody to claim it and say, that was my mortgage from 5 years ago. Yeah, that's fine. You know, put it on my account, okay? So you have to manage this. You have to monitor it, okay? Another good thing to do is just simply put a credit freeze on your account. And I would recommend this for everybody. And what that does is that anybody tries to open any account, it will be blocked until you authorize it. They will have to contact you, and they have to validate your identity, and they will have to get your approval to go through with that. Now, that slows down your loan application process by a day or two if you're not thinking about it and you're like, oh, I was going to buy this car. I forgot about it. I'm going to get a loan. I went to the bank and they're like, hey, we got to do this. But then, you know, that application gets rejected. Well, it takes a day for them to be able to call the credit union or the credit bureau and figure that out and get your authorization. So it adds a couple of days to that process. Big whoop. Okay. But it certainly protects you. So the question is LifeLock and those, are they pretty good? They certainly offer some protection, but they by no means are offering stellar protection. The CEO of LifeLock used to give his, you know, Social Security number online or, you know, out on the on his commercials and everything. I don't know if you noticed, he doesn't do that anymore. There's a reason for that. so nothing is foolproof. And before you go and buy LifeLock or one of those, check with the insurance company that you have for your home, auto, life. Okay, if you got State Farm or Nationwide or whatever, they usually offer a product that's similar to what they're doing for like half, a third, a quarter of the price. I think State Farm had a product a couple years ago that was like $8 for the year to add on to your homeowner's insurance, and it did the same thing that LifeLock would do as far as the protections. It didn't do the monitoring, but if you had a problem, it would pay the same amounts and they would help you do the same stuff. So instead of paying $8 a month, you pay $8 a year and you get most of the same protection. So just do your research and look at some different options there. Okay.
Where do you do the credit freeze? Do you do it on those?
Yeah, you call each of these. You have to do it with each of those three. You just call them. They might have an online form to do it too. I can't remember, but I think they have to have your verbal authorization to do it. And then you just tell them you want to put a credit freeze on your account, and I would do it for an infant all the way through somebody that's, hey, I'm retired and I don't really use this anymore. I would do it across the spectrum, okay? Yeah.
Okay, so we've done all this, mm-hmm. And now we went to refinancing our house, and my experience is I've gotten 2 new resets, but they just give you the exact same number again.
That's probably somebody just being lazy. There is a credit report out there, and there's it's available. It just basically comes up which says you need specific authorization to do that. So my guess is it was just the bank being lazy.
No, the code doesn't work. I have control over lifting the freeze temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
My code doesn't work anymore. It worked in January. It works no longer.
I don't know. Each of them work differently, so I don't know about the specific codes that they use and how you lift those freezes and those types of things. So.
Dave, I'm missing something on the credit freeze.
Yep.
So anytime your credit card is used?
No. Anytime somebody wants to open a new account.
A new account, yep. On that credit card.
Yep. God. Yeah. So not even on that credit card. So if somebody wants to open a new credit card, a new credit account. So somebody tries to get a Casey's gas card, you know, I guess Casey's a bad example, but a JCPenney's card, right, or Best Buy card, or somebody goes to try and get a loan for a car, or somebody tries to get a school loan, and they try and put it in your name, the credit bureau is going to say, sorry, you can't do that. I have to call this individual and make that happen.
Does the credit freeze include inquiries?
It does include some inquiries, yes. So certain inquiries are allowed under law, but the ones that are just, hey, we want to offer you a credit card, if you get a ton of credit card offers, those will go down significantly if you don't do this because they are not allowed to just do a simple inquiry for some of that. There's various regulations and different ways that they can get around that. So it's not going to eliminate it, but it will certainly decrease some of it. So, yeah.
I've heard that a freeze is permanent as far as you go through this process every time, you can never ever remove that. Is that true?
Yeah, the freeze is permanent. Yep. So once you put the freeze on, you can lift the freeze, but I don't see any value in doing that. I mean, if you put the freeze on, there's probably a reason that you wanted to do that. You can do the temporary, you know, approvals that you're going to approve a specific thing. But I would say if you want to do it and be done with it. So some additional things. I got to get rolling here, sorry. But be careful what you throw in the trash, okay? There's lots of stuff that you guys throw away that could be very valuable to me as a hacker, okay? Written down stuff, passwords, and just all sorts of crazy stuff. Don't browse untrusted websites, okay? So just be careful. When you see a link, make sure that you trust it before you click on it. Be careful what you post on social media, okay? Facebook users, any Facebook users in here? Yeah, a few of you, okay? Twitter, maybe not. You know, don't tell the world that you're going to Texas for the winter, okay? I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have a friend that, you know, they don't have much time, you don't have much time, but all of a sudden you get another request from them to be a friend.
Yeah.
Somebody told me that that's hacking.
Yeah, so the question is, you know, requests on Facebook of friends of friends. Sometimes that is hacking. Sometimes that's somebody trying to get access to, you know, see your timeline and those types of things. So you certainly have to be careful with that. You certainly need to adjust your privacy settings. And there's information on Facebook and those other sites for how to adjust this. You can test what your profile looks like from an external user, somebody that's not your friend. I would highly recommend doing that. The biggest thing here is the more information you put out there, the more people know about you. Okay. The more they know about you, the easier it is to get you to trust them and that they would be able to use that against you at some point. And this happens all the time. Okay, my company does this for a living. Companies pay us to come and hack them. One of the things that we do is we find some of their senior leaders, their technology people, whatever, on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff, and we troll through all of that information and we build profiles for them, and then we go and attack them and we get in. Okay, so this stuff happens all the time. It is happening. Okay. Like Ronald Reagan used to say, trust but verify, okay? Again, I'm not telling you to stop using technology. I'm not telling you that all of this stuff is bad. I'm telling you that there are some bad elements out there, that there are things that you need to worry about. For the most part, you can trust what's there, but I would verify what is there. Verify what you have in your homes. Verify what you've got plugged into your network. Verify the emails that are coming in. Verify the websites that you're going to, okay? Just be diligent. That's the best term I can use, is just be diligent. Don't just assume that everything out there is safe and okay. And then a couple of other resources for you. The FTC, Federal Trade Commission, has a great website for protecting yourself against identity theft. Okay, lots of different resources that you can get here. And then they also have what we call Stop, Think, Connect, okay, which is another government website that is used. There are resources out there for all stages of life, parents with kids, senior citizens, teachers, professionals. There's videos, there's downloads, there's games, there's just a whole wealth of information. So use these resources. I'll send a copy to Greg or Bob and, yeah, one of you guys, and you guys can send it out. So you'll have this entire slideshow and presentation, so feel free to share it. You know, we do other things like this at different libraries and stuff like that across the city. So feel free to reach out if you have questions, you know, those types of things. Yeah. We do not have enough time for that conversation. there's a couple of ways. So one, if your computer starts running really slow, that's a potential indication that there's something bad happening on your machine. Okay. If all of a sudden, you know, you're seeing odd charges, here's one. If you see some odd deposits, like 2-3 cents on your, you know, on your bank statement, and you don't know where they came from, that's somebody trying to test to see if that account is active and you're ripe for a big deposit, I mean a big withdrawal to come out. So you need to look and make sure that you're reconciling your bank account every month, and if you have any weird deposits in there, make sure you understand where those are from and why. So, okay. Any other
Russians who hacked the DNC, or was it Dave Nelson?
It was not Dave Nelson. We did not have authorization. If they had given us authorization, yes. I can tell you certain presidential candidates came to us and said, hey, will you hack our sites and do some other stuff to make sure that this is good? So, yeah. Yeah. Those people are insane. So the question is the chips that people are putting in their hands. There's now an employer, first in the U.S., that's giving their employees opportunities to be chipped, just like we chip our dogs. There'd be proximity sensors. They'll be able to track them anywhere they go within the building, outside the building. They may even have GPS sensors in them. They can pay for their snacks and lunches and all that sort of stuff. They can log into their computers. I just tell you this, it is a really, really, really bad idea. The state of Iowa is going to roll out digital driver's license this year. I can tell you that is a really, really bad idea. We are nowhere near ready for that. The infrastructure is not there. The security is not there. I voiced my concerns with that, and they basically said, thanks, you're a crazy, lunatic, paranoid guy. And I said, yeah, that's my job. But I can tell you that's the case. So I apologize. I'm going to be late for a meeting downtown. So thank you very much. If you need anything, let Bob know.